Morning, everybody. How are you doing out there? Ellie Lowther here, ELC 101, Ellie Lowther Collective. Call it what you will, you still get me. Well, you know, I do different types of podcasts, don't I? And, like, I do my music matters, community matters, and different networky type things. And my Fat Club podcast, you know, I went on this weight loss journey. I lost 4 stone from last September. I had my 14 series Fat Club podcast, what I put out, which I've took down at the minute because I'd achieved my goal, really. And I was thinking to myself, you know something, I really need to do a podcast series which is going to happen and stay up there, which will be a bit of a record. And this is it. This is episode one, really. So we're here today, it's the 18th of January 2021, and I've got to give you a little bit of history about me to start with. But when I come out as trans in 2012, it was a really tough time. I lost most of my family members, I lost friends, I was homeless for a while. It wasn't the best time in my life, but in another sense, it was a time when I actually thought, if my life means anything, I have to be my true authentic self. So I knew for my life to get anywhere, I had to take that step. And even though I didn't know what would happen, I knew that step was something I had to take. You might ask, why am I doing a podcast now, 8 years on? And I asked that myself as well, but there is a reason, and the reason is that when I first started down this mad road, I had a lot of weight to lose, and, like, overall, you know, I've lost over 5 stone, but I never thought I would, and I joined Slimming World. And I started trying to aim at losing weight. And I'd lost some and it kept coming back on. Lost some and it kept coming back on. And the rest of my life went okay. I a couple of years weight. I got seen by the gender clinic. And I got onto hormones. And hormones have done a world of wonders for me, to be fair. And not just physically, but mentally as well. Because people don't think of the side benefits when you go on hormones. People think it's just sort of like to either feminize or masculine yourself, or, you know, it's sort of like, depending on which way you're going, obviously. But it does a lot more than that, you know. It actually sort of, like, it feels like it rewires your brain in a way. It rewires my brain anyway. I'll give you for instance. I wanted to play guitar my entire life, and I couldn't do it. Because I couldn't get my head around it. I didn't have the mental patience to do it. So, you know, once the hormones kicks in and your brain rewires, I found that I had more capacity to learn. And I could enjoy that space where I could actually do things, rather than sit there in my Maya and my dysfunctional self. And now, like, I write songs, I play songs, and I do so much more. I feel I'm capable of doing so much more than I ever was, you know. Also helps in other ways. Pre-transition, you wouldn't have seen me stood up in front of roomfuls of people educating them on issues. You wouldn't see me sitting and doing a radio show, you know. You wouldn't see me sitting and actually just being my full self, getting out there and just being me and enjoying every day, because I couldn't be me pre-transition, because I was only a percentage of me. I wasn't the full me, if that makes sense. And this life thing, we've only got one. So for me, it had to mean something. You know something? When I considered doing this podcast, I thought to myself, what's the trigger for it? And the trigger for it is that something's happened, something's changed. And I went to see Mr. Thomas in Brighton 4 years ago for my pre-op assessment. And I had to lose a lot of weight then. So it was a case of, well, as soon as you lose the weight, give us a shout and and we're okay. We'll get sorted. And you know something, I'm very, very pleased to say that since September last year, when I discovered yoga and I discovered a bit more of a better mindset, and I realized that, you know, I'm actually worth the bother. I've actually got to that weight now. And a week or so back, I went down to Brighton to see Mr. Thomas again, and I've now been accepted for surgery, and my surgery is due on the 25th of February. So I thought, right, so it's about 5 weeks away now. So I thought I'm going to do a bit of a transition podcast, just having a bit of a chat and a walk through and a talk through some of the issues that I've seen over time. You know, not just within myself. I've supported over 400 people going through transition. I've spoke with well over 1,000 family members and friends, helping people to understand what it's like when their family member or friend comes out in transition. I've got a wide range of knowledge in this area. Plus, I've also got my own personal knowledge, and I feel as if I've got a good sense of discernment. So I feel as if, you know, these little podcasts, anyone who's going through this journey, bit by bit, you maybe get a bit of guidance, a bit of help, or just the feeling that you're not on your own, you know, because isolation's a massive thing, it really is. When you come out, when I come out, I felt like I was turned into an outcast in the community that I'd grown up in for the last 45 years, you know. And at that time, the thought of me going out and presenting in male mode, it just triggered me so much I couldn't do it. And the difficulty comes when, like, you know, like your parents says, that you can't go to their house unless you're dressed properly, meaning dressed in male mode. And I'd find myself for the first couple of days scurrying down back alleys and like not wanting anyone to see me. Even though the wider world then didn't know I was trans, but I knew. And when you know a truth deep within yourself, it's impossible to unknow that truth. And that taps into dysphoria. So I talk to people about dysphoria on my training sessions. And the easiest way I can explain dysphoria is if you can imagine two bits of sandpaper rubbing together. You know, that's sort of like that feeling of inner friction within the self. And add to that, you know, we all have a conscious brain and we see things, we act on what we see, we move forward, and that's just the way we work and the world works. But we also have an unconscious or a subconscious, we have an inner knowing within ourselves. And if that doesn't agree from all the information that's being fed into it from the outside world, due to what a doctor assigned somebody at birth, or due to what a doctor assigned me at birth, then, oh, I just feel as if it's easy to see why, like, there might be some incongruence if you don't actually identify as the gender you've been assigned at birth. And for me, that's sort of like beginning an understanding of what gender dysphoria is. And for older people, you know, for anyone my age coming out in transition, you find like there's some other aspects here because for the first 45 years of my life, every fabric, every part of my life was confirming that me, Ellie, as a trans woman, did not exist. And any thoughts that I had in this area were truly just something to be ignored and put aside. Because the consequences of not ignoring them and putting them aside would mean that my life would change in a negative way. But that's from the people around me. I didn't realize then that it would change in such a positive way by being my own self. And don't get me wrong, it comes with cost. It really does. I was in a really good relationship when I started the transition route. And my partner's children, who were actually in college, they just weren't on board with their parents' partner being trans. And you know, and it's sad. It's like there's a lot of people who are maybe supportive, but fearful of what other people think, and you know, and that means that they make a decision on what the neighbours would say, rather than what they think themselves. If they were living in a more, if they were living in a more welcoming society, maybe these people wouldn't be as excluding. And I think it's not like, it's like the karaoke effect, you know, because we judge ourselves on the world around us and how everyone else views us. I think that's something I feel as if I needed to get away from, because I had to for me to be me. And it doesn't matter what other people think or say, because they're not living my life. You know, they're not living my life, they're living their life. They might see me, have a judgment on me, and then go upon their day, and like I'm nothing but an afterthought or a thought to them. Whereas to me as an individual, my life is my entire being. So being one's true, authentic self is just a massive, massive thing. It really is. Because life's short, and if you can't be your true self in your life, then I almost feel as if it's I'm almost wasting my time, you know, by you know, maybe we have to triumph over adversity, shall we say, because that's what progress is, isn't it? And we move forward, and you know, once you question yourself, once you question your gender, once you question situations in your life, you may find that parts of your life has to change because of the questioning, because you're no longer living in ignorance of them issues. And that's what it was for me. It truly was. On another note, you know, I've noticed over time, like friends of mine, when you're friends with somebody who's going through a transition and you see somebody living their true self, it gives other people the impetus to be to do the same again, and they might put up with less BS in their life from people than they used to, you know. And it's all about self-worth, really. Anyway, so I went to see Mr. Thomas last week. I drove down, 6 hour drive there, 6 hour drive back. Emma, who's in my bubble, went down with me, and basically in and out, and that was that. But when I got the okay for my surgery, and bear in mind the surgery is something that I desperately want, and it's something that I desperately wanted for such a long time, once I actually got the okay for it, I started to discombobulate a bit. I was thinking, oh hang on, I need a lot more, I need to process something now, because I never thought I'd get to this point. Deep down I didn't. You know, deep down, I truly never thought I would be able to lose the weight which would allow me to have surgery. And I think that taps into the whole subconscious self-harm. I think for me, never stopping questioning myself and always trying to work things out. Why am I doing this? Why am I doing that? I think it's led me down a path which actually has served me quite well. You know, in a personal and a public and a professional viewpoint in life, I actually feel like now I actually own my life. But I own my life because I constantly like assess myself, and I constantly adjust if I feel I have any areas to adjust in, and it takes me to a better place. But here's the rub. When I found out I was getting my surgery, and everything all of a sudden became very urgent very quickly, and I felt a little bit overwhelmed by it all. And like, this isn't because I don't want the surgery, this is possibly because I'm scared of the surgery. And this is more to do with, you know, like I've never ever been under anaesthetic in my life. I've never had an operation. And by not having that experience, then it feels very much the unknown, so it adds to it. I'm similar with flying, to be fair. You know, I've never been on an aeroplane in my entire life, and you know, it's just one of those where I think to myself, oh, I just can't equate getting onto a plane and that big piece of metal going up in the air. And here's the rub, I'm going to Los Angeles at some point. So that's something else I need to overcome. But looking at this with the with the surgery and with the feelings around being under an anaesthetic and all this type of stuff, in the couple of days while I was worrying about this, I felt as if I fell off the wagon and I just went back to eating unhealthily and stuff. I stopped doing yoga and I was just in my maya, if you will. And it took me a few days to sort of work out, and a bit of encouragement from our Emma, to be fair, who say she phoned me up one night and I pretty much demanded that I go and do a half hour yoga session, which I did. And I think that almost like reset myself a bit. So like, obviously I'm back on it now. I'm doing this diary, if you will, as a bit of a run up to surgery. And I think I'll carry it on and I'll continue through my recovery from surgery as well. So I think it could be useful to have a bit of a commentary, you know, sort of thing. Because I know, like, I was looking around for some kind of resource for people who've been through transition, who've gone through these steps, just to maybe read about or hear about their experiences. And the stuff that had served me is a bit thin on the ground. So I'd like to create something that I feel I would like to access if I was in this position. Does that make sense? It does to me anyway. So I'm going to aim to do one of these each week, just with observations, and I'll give you a few instances and experiences from my years of transition. And if you have any questions that you'd like to ask around anything to do with transition, or any of the meaty subjects around transition as well that sort of divide people, whether it be faith or sport or religion or politics or whatever, anything that impacts on inclusion, if you want me to cover it in these podcasts, I'll do a little bit at the end of each podcast where I'll tackle one of those issues, you know, because I do feel as if there's always a radical middle ground, and that middle ground is where everyone can feel included. Wherever we're going in the future, if we leave anyone behind, we're missing the point, aren't we? And that's something that this last year or so, dealing with COVID and looking at the whole Brexit situation, that's something that we should maybe bear in mind, you know. So yes, so we're here, it's the 18th of January 2021. I've hit my weight for surgery and I'm heading off to Brighton in 5 weeks' time. So wish me luck, and I will see yous next time. There'll be another one next week. This is pretty much an introductory, just a bit of an overview of like the history of me, if you will. I suppose if I'm doing an overview of the history of me, I should mention some of the things like from my past, you know, like when I was born, I was a second child, born in a terraced house in the back streets of Middlesbrough, and there were six of us in a two up two down house, and so like personal space wasn't always afforded, and yeah. But the thing is, my first memories were my dreams. And my dreams were sort of, you know, like, I imagine young boys' dreams would be like in Western films and, you know, like, or army films and stuff like that. And my dreams were in like Western films and stuff, but I was always a damsel in distress in my dreams. I was always like the girl in the checkered dress, tied to the railway tracks, and Audie Murphy would be coming to rescue me. And if you don't know who Audie Murphy is, AudieMurphy, go and Google him. And so he used to be in all the cavalry films, which is quite fitting. And you know, and I don't even think I had that much of a problem with gender dysphoria as such. But growing up in the late 60s, early 70s, there was nothing there that even made me think that trans was a thing or visible or even existed. You know, I just thought I was just a more cultured person than all of my peers, maybe. And it's hard to explain. But that sandpaper feeling I mentioned earlier on, for me, that happened when I went to secondary school, once puberty hit. Having to get changed in a room full of boys, it was just so traumatic, and I didn't even know why. I just didn't know why, and it was just felt so wrong. And tap that into my dreams of my actual physical dreams, which have always been from a female perspective. You know, like, and that never went either when I was growing up. I was getting married to Jamie, the lad who ran the pub in the Jockey in Shameless. You know, like Trisha Penrose, like Surreal Dream in a Cinema were there, and she's saying to me, "We were meant to know each other." And I was going to write to her, but I didn't. I just can't be doing that. You know, this is pre-transition, and it's like it's you know Tara Palmer Tomkinson, the quite famous It Girl. She was my bestie mate in my dreams for years, but in my waking life, I couldn't stand her. I couldn't abide her. Seriously, it's crazy. So, and I was still in denial because trans was the one thing that I wasn't, you know, because I thought that being trans was a choice. I thought, you know, like as a teenager, I'd see some people. I'd maybe seen one person in my town who was at what to what I perceived male, who was wearing female clothing. And that was my perception at that time. I now know better. And that person was bullied like a dog from morning till night. And like the mindset and the things in my head, the triggers would be telling me that that's why would anyone choose to have that much abuse? You know, and like that feeling of why would anyone choose to have that much abuse sort of like used to drive my decision. But then, you know, then we have this almost like a Kairos moment. Well, I did. When I realized that for my life to actually mean anything to me, I had to be myself. And, you know, like we work with hashtag free to be me. Because any one of us, for one reason or another, can be bullied or discriminated against just for being ourselves. Until we're all truly free to be ourselves, we're never going to create the safe, more inclusive world that benefits us all. And another hashtag we work with is We Are the Change. Because, you know, like the Barack Obama speech about be the change that you want to see in the world. I think when we own ourselves, then we have to realize that we are the change that we want to see in the world. Because we have had to change, I have had to change. For my life to mean anything, for my life to have make me feel like I actually have a sense of self-worth. And one of the toughest decisions I ever made, but certainly the best decision I've ever made. Because how can you do something wrong by being your true self? And if there is something wrong with being your true self, then there's nothing wrong with yourself, I feel. There's nothing wrong with me. There's maybe a need to actually own myself more because I understand that the world isn't a binary place. The world isn't a binary place with opinions either. And it's true that there are some people out there who are maybe against trans identities for many different reasons. And you know, and like, I have no doubt some people who are against trans identities, similar as some people who are homophobes, will be people who are harboring feelings themselves, who, you know, they don't or they can't show acceptance for these people truly, such as myself, because by showing acceptance for myself, they've got no reason not to show acceptance for themselves, whatever their issue may be. And I'm not saying that everyone's issue is trans or LGB either. I'm saying a lot of us as human beings have run on issues. And this flee or fight thing that we all have built into us that ties into our like our subconscious. And if we have a look at ourselves, I think a lot of us are fleeing more than fighting. And we are living in a peaceful society, allegedly, where everyone should get on with each other. But the fighting doesn't have to be physically beating somebody up. It's a state of mind. It truly is a state of mind. So where we're looking at flee or flight, look at what drives our engine. Are we driving our engine forward, or are we driving our engine backwards? For me, driving the engine backwards is the flee factor. And that's the thing, is where I daren't be me, because what will they say? I daren't be me because I might get beat up. Or I daren't be me because, bear in mind I'm mixed race, I'm trans, I'm Christian. I know what it's like to be, singled out. I know what it's like to be oppressed as well. And it's just a case of this forward, backwards driving. What's driving me? So pre-transition, I was flee. I always flee. I wouldn't go near this area of my life. And I never cross-dressed either. It was never about cross-dressing. It was just about feeling peace within myself. I understand since I come out as me, I've actually started to move forward. So, and that moving forward isn't just moving forward, sort of like, I don't want to fight anybody. I don't fight. Do you know what I mean? I like to talk to people. I like to learn about people as well. And I like to learn about myself, because I realize that, like, we are all moving objects. We are all changing, and recognizing where I am today and doing the best for me today is the best that I can do. And I suggest it's probably the best that you can do as well. The difficult thing is actually finding what the best is. And it's like the internet. It's like, you put the truth in a barrel full of lies and everything looks the same. Everything's tainted. So that's why sometimes taking a step out of yourself and, I'll give you a little physical exercise if you want. For me, when I come out as trans, once I truly knew that trans was who I was, Ellie is who I was, trans is transgender, I knew that I'd have to, once I knew that I would have to transition, I started writing a list of positives and negatives. And in that list of positives and negatives, on the negative side was what would happen if I transitioned, to my mind. And on that list was loads of negatives. Family disowning you, never work again, all this type of stuff, no one will ever love you. You'd be destitute, not knowing you'll never get a job, and all of this type of stuff. Lots of reasons there, on if you're weighing up reasons to not do something. And on the positive side, there was one word, and the one word that was on that positive side was me. And that one word, me, I knew for me to be able to feel like my life has worth, I had to give that word, me, more value than everything else in that list on the negative side. And that, my friends, is where I think I'll probably leave it today. And I am going to do more of these. I'll do one each week. And I'll make sure they get posted up as well. And I'll leave these here. Because I think over the next few weeks, I think there's a decent opportunity to actually dissect some issues around trans, to also keep a bit of a diary about my run up to surgery, and hopefully it'll help somebody, and if it helps one person, then that's fine and dandy. Right then, I'll leave it there. Be safe and take care of each other, and remember to take care of yourself as well. If you are dealing with issues around gender dysphoria and you feel as if there's no support, or you'd like to talk to somebody about, you know, your options, or if you're a family member of somebody who's come out as trans and you can't get your head around it, feel free to give me a shout. Email Ellie, that's Ellie, at essentiallearningcurve.com, and I'm more than happy to have a virtual cup of coffee with you on Zoom, just to have a chat. And I've had people who've been in transition contact me from all around the country, and like for support because their area has been bereft of support. And you know something, reaching out and having a chat is never a negative thing. Staying isolated can be. Till next time, much love.